Police in El Cajon, California confirm it was a vape smoking device that Alfred Alango pointed at police just before he was shot dead on Tuesday. His sister, Lucy Peterson, had called 911 and told them her brother suffered mental health issues. Here's a bit of the heartbreaking audio on the scene right after his death.
Oh my God, you killed my brother!
Do you have somebody you could call?
Peterson, the sister, went on to say, why didn't you send a crisis communication team? Well, it turns out El Cajon does have mental health professionals involved with the force. They weren't available that night. But there are other ways the police departments are handling mental health calls. In 2003, Major James Cleek helped start crisis intervention training in Indianapolis. He's now training bureau commander there. He joins us. And Jim, you've told us you can't comment too much on El Cajon. There'll be an investigation, but tell us your initial thoughts when you heard about it.
Well, I think it took us back, took me back to several thoughts. And the reason why we have crisis intervention teams today in CIT, as it originated in Memphis in 88, in a very similar circumstance where officers shot a mentally ill subject and there was a cry for help from the community to find better ways to deal with those in crisis. And then we've come so far where there are over 3,000 CIT programs across the country. But what really probably hits home for me is that these families that do call the police are in a desperate situation where they really don't know what else to do.
This is a very personal issue to you.
It is. I have four children, three of which are adopted from Ukraine, and one of my three that are adopted from Ukraine was diagnosed with bipolar 2 in the last year. So as a family, we were just lucky enough to fight through the desperation ourselves and eventually get him on medication. And he's, by all intents and purposes, living a very productive life, has recently become an Eagle Scout. Mm. But what we know about the people that we serve here in Indianapolis, many of these people are not only desperate, but they don't have the resources. What happens is they call the police because they don't know who else to call.
Well, Jim, I have to ask you, though, when you see something like, you know, a person going through the break, the psychotic moment, that must make your blood run cold to think that it could have been your son and police responding not knowing that.
Well, I've thought about that. When we were in the middle of our crisis itself, I saw some of the warning signs, but I didn't see everything. And the difference is with someone who has a diagnosable mental illness and they're in the middle of that crisis is that all of the things that they're seeing, feeling, thinking are real, even though they may not be real to us. Mm. And for me, of course, I went through the same thoughts when my son was going through his issues, and then I had those talks with him that if he was in that place and he was to encounter the police, it was him that needed to slow things down and him that needed to listen to the commands.
Well, how lucky, first of all, that your son has you for a dad, that he could, you know, have that instruction. But when he's in the middle of a break, he might not be able to follow through on that. And most people don't have a dad who happens to work in crisis intervention. And as we're disclosing, I will as well, many listeners know I have a loved one who also struggled with mental health issues. And here in our area, Boston, we had a special team that you were assigned to. These were police officers who were specially trained. You had their cell phone numbers and you had coded language that you gave them when there was an issue. Is that part of what you'd like to see in cities? What happens in Indianapolis?
Well, in Indianapolis, we start from the beginning where all of our rookie officers go through 48 weeks of training before they graduate the academy, which is unheard of probably. We chunk training for CIT in response to mental illness and crisis throughout the first 26 weeks. We send them out to field training, then we bring them back for an advanced school for crisis intervention in an effort to change just the way we think because we believe it's so prevalent. I mean, there's some estimations out there that disturbance runs involve about 75% people who are either exhibiting signs of mental illness or addiction issues, and we need to give our officers every single tool, including technology, to be able to deal with that. But we believe starting with communication and de-escalation is the answer, realizing that sometimes that isn't an option when things are happening fast. Thus far, we've made it a rule that all of our rookies get the training. That was something that was unheard of, although now there are other major metropolitan area police departments across the country that are starting to do the very same thing. We do have many veteran officers also, so when the call goes out, dispatchers are trained to identify that call as a possible mental health crisis, and then we respond. But we also take it a step further where we have a behavioral health unit with mental health liaisons from Eskenazi Hospital who work on the districts with behavioral health units and do follow-ups with either repeat calls or people we know of or we come to know who are experiencing crisis and need that kind of help.
Yeah. What else do you do? I'm understanding that, I mean, one of the concerns, obviously, is when the mentally ill are armed. And we understand that there's a state law that allows police to confiscate and hold weapons from any person they suspect is mentally unstable or dangerous, even if that person hasn't committed a crime.
Well, that's true. We do have a law, and that was as a result of a past case in our history where one of our officers was killed by a person who we had had run-ins before. And now it does allow us to take those weapons temporarily in an effort to save, you know, brothers and sisters, moms and dads, officers, etc.
So Major James Cleek, again, he trains police officers to deal with mental health in Indianapolis. He himself is a crisis-trained officer. And he has a son who is winning the battle, we understand, with mental illness. So it seems like we have two things going on here. We have the families who fear for their loved ones and what their loved ones might do. But they might be watching what happened in El Cajon and says, I'm not going to call the police. Then you have the police who, especially I'm hearing of your fellow officers, want to help. And then, you know, they see a fellow officer shot and killed. How do we bridge that?
Well, I think it's difficult. When we started CIT, it was about the same time that Jake Laird was killed here, which was the officer that was killed by the person that was, really just completely off the grid but had semi-automatic weapons. We were introducing this training at the same time that had occurred, so we had a battle years ago of how do you balance this? What does this mean to officers? What we've seen is that more de-escalation, more communication, recognizing signs of mental illness and medications and learning different ways of talking to persons who are suffering from these things, reduced injuries to officers, to the person who was suffering from that crisis. And, you know, ultimately that's what we want. But if we don't have the resources, the places to take someone to get the help, it's an ongoing battle. Right. That might not be one.
Yeah. Well, and just briefly, should families with mentally ill loved ones reach out to the police?
Well, we have that happen quite often where families do contact us. They're referred to that behavioral health unit. We're also getting ready to introduce mental health first aid, which is another way to train on recognizing and, for lack of a better term, providing kind of mental health CPR.
James Cleek, Major James Cleek, I just have to ask you one last question. How ironic that you were working on this for years before your own child was diagnosed with mental illness. It seems to just show that you just never know.
Well, I wonder for a long time, you know. I have a heart for people. I definitely have a heart for people that can't help themselves, and that's why I became a police officer, so I could stand up for those that couldn't. Mental illness is one of those things that I know that affects people in so many ways. It affects families and moms and dads and brothers and sisters and everyone else. And I had no idea all of those years, all of those runs I was on, all of those places I was, you know, I ended up being as a police officer was preparing me to save the life of my son. And you know, that's pretty devastating.
That's Major James Cleek of the Indianapolis Police Department. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Robin, for having me.